Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's raising the vibration. Right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network and iHeartRadio.com. We're also on Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Blog Talk Radio, iVox, Player FM, the list goes on and on. Honored to be a part of this wonderful network and all of its wonderful affiliates, and of course thrilled to be a part of the iHeartRadio family. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 28-year talk radio host in Los Angeles and beyond. I'm weeks away from being a 29-year talk radio host, and I come to you live from my home in Southern California every Wednesday at 3 o'clock Pacific time. This show is an outreach of a nonprofit movement of peace and love and kindness and unity that I started after my mom passed to sort of carry on her teachings, all the good stuff that I was raised with. Mom believed that the world, humanity, needed more peace, more love, more kindness, more unity, and that that was essential to raising your vibration. And I agree, and I carry on her teachings. This show is also about ascension, evolvement, inspiration, and again, love. Basically, you know, how are you helping to aid your overall ascension and evolvement? And then how are you taking those two things, most importantly, and using them to inspire others? What's your passion? What's your service? And most importantly, what are you doing to make the world a better place? So every week on the show, I gather folks that I believe to be the brightest and the loveliest and the most beautiful minds and hearts and souls that I know, and we talk about what we're all doing to make the world a better place. And my guest today is no exception. I've interviewed her so many times. I adore her. I've sat on panels with her. She's as kind as she is fun and, you know, really understands what it's like to make others around her feel joy. Such a talented actress, such a talented author, a talented fine artist, and probably the only person in the world, I believe the only person in the world, who can say that they were both a part of Little House on the Prairie and Eraserhead. Please welcome to the show my wonderful friend Charlotte Stewart is here. How are you, darling? It's so good to hear your voice and have you here.
I was wondering who you were talking about.
Eraserhead.
I thought, wait a minute, that can't
you.
Be me.
but that, hi, that is you, and that's what I love about you, and that's very much a part of your book, right? Is that you?
Yeah.
You have these two sides, right? You are very much the girl next door. You're also very much the Hollywood woman who's had a lot of Hollywood experiences, and I think that shows people that it's okay to be two things. You know, I'm the rock and roll queen of the nighttime world, and I'm also a nice girl from Connecticut. Like, you can be both of those things, and it's
yes,
okay to explore
true.
All sides of yourself, right? And you just you have just lived and loved and had experiences and really sort of been a part of everything life had to offer you, and I admire you for that, and I think that makes you a hero.
Gina, thank you. At 82 years old, I'm still doing all of
right.
it and having a ball. I'm up here in the beautiful Napa Valley. I moved up here about 15 years ago, decided I wanted a little quieter place to live and less traffic, and it's been absolutely wonderful. I'm closer to my family, and that means so much to me.
Oh, and I think that's so important. And you know what? I don't know if you know, but I did the same thing. I'm not in Napa, but I'm in the town I grew up in Huntington Beach.
Yeah.
I don't have biological family. My mom was my only family, but both of my best friends' families are here, and they're very much my family. I consider my friend's son to be my nephew and my other friend's daughter to be my niece. And I moved here during COVID to be close to family, and I just stayed. And it feels good to have a break.
Yeah,
I
had lost all my family too. Yeah, you know, I've got 10 nieces and nephews that I'm very close to. They all live in the Bay Area, and so we Zoom every Sunday, which is a lot of fun because I get up on whatever things that they're doing, and they also get up on what I'm doing. And I've been traveling a lot lately. You know, Little House on the Prairie is coming up on its 50th anniversary next year. And we've been we've been in Missouri, Kansas, Illinois. I'm going to Oklahoma and Kentucky. I don't think I've ever been busier in my life. You know, it's so much fun.
Isn't that great?
And I get to see all my cast members. Allison, of course, is your dear, dear friend. Allison Arndrum,
yes,
who played Nellie. Isn't she wonderful? And have
She's
you talked to Wendy?
World.
Oh, I know. Have you talked to Wendy Louie?
Oh, I love Wendy. Wendy, who played Baby Grace?
Yes, and her second book is coming out in August.
I need to get her here.
Yeah.
I've only seen her when I've hosted panels with all of you, and I love her energy, and I love Rachel, and I love Patrick. I love them all. I mean, I've never met a Little House person I didn't love. I think it's beautiful.
We're pretty good.
The way
I think
you're
we
close.
Had a wonderful
I think
experience
it's beautiful.
We had such a wonderful experience with Michael Landon. You know, he was, you know, a lot of people don't know what a crazy and wonderful, loving person he was. Especially lately, for some reason, he's been on my mind so much. It's almost psychic. I've been making these tote bags, souvenir tote bags with pictures of Little House on the Prairie on them for all of my wanderings all over. And I happened to be working on one with Michael, with a picture of Michael. And he's looking right at the camera. And I looked at him, and it was very emotional. I said, Michael, thank you. Thank you for everything you gave me. Thank you for your friendship. I miss you so much. You know, he was, most people don't know what a wonderful giving boss he was. You know, he was our boss.
Yeah.
But he was Michael, you know. He had fun and he was strict. And, you know, the kids adored him, especially, you know, I know you've talked to, you know, Laura, Melissa Gilbert, Melissa Sue Anderson about their relationship with Michael. He was just such a giving person. So I just feel so fortunate. You know, to have been in his eyesight, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's, and that's the gift, right? I've been talking a lot about, I do a show because I also came out as a psychic. I don't know if you know that or not, but that happened after my mom died because she was as well. And I was talking today on my psychic show that I do before this for a streaming network on TV about, you know, inspiration, right? That the world is a wheel, right? I mean, we become inspired by others, and then we grow and change, and then we pass on that inspiration, and we inspire other people, and then they inspire other people. And that's kind of what makes the world a better place. And I think whenever you interview somebody who was a part of Little House on the Prairie, you feel the imprint of Michael's energy on them.
Yeah.
And he had a big Scorpio energy, right? There was a lot there. But he affected people, and they went on and became a certain kind of person to work with and to be, because he was the same. And I think the way that Allison kind of picked up the reins and keeps you all together, right? She keeps it all going.
Yes, exactly.
That's interesting. I remember the first time I interviewed Patrick Laberteau, he said to me, you know that thing about Allison – where she brings everybody together. And I said, yeah. And he said, she was like that as a kid. She was she's always been that person. And I think that's a beautiful thing, right? She's a tribe builder. And so many people I've interviewed on my show have been because she brought them to me. We call her the gateway guest because first I interviewed her and then the floodgates opened. But that's the kind of person I think we need to think about. Do I want to be that person who inspires people every day? And I think you guys schlepping all over the world, doing these conferences and get-togethers to make the day of these people who grow up watching a show they loved and never thought they would meet any of you. I think that's such a beautiful thing that you all do.
Especially the promoter, Jack Bishop is our boss kind of on all of these, you know, cross-country shows and all. And he has picked up the reins of Michael in Inspiration. And what he does is he goes into very, very small towns in the Midwest, places where celebrities, you know, people on television, movies, never go. And he opens up the doors to a fairgrounds or a you know, a civic center or something, not a civic center, they don't have them in the small towns, but he brings in 2,000 and 3,000 people a day to meet us.
Wow.
And they would never have had a chance to. They are so full of gratitude when you see a mother and a father and two little kids who are still watching Little House on the Prairie that, you know, never thought they would meet us. You know, not that we're overly special, but it's just kind of it's a fun, inspirational thing to do. To say, well, it's so glad to meet you, you know, and you see the little kids especially, they're just, their eyes are open like, you're Miss Beetle or you're Nellie. We have such a good time. It's inspirational.
And isn't that why as actors, I mean, maybe not everybody, but for me, that was why I got into the entertainment business, to move people and to lighten their load, to make them happy, to make them laugh, to make them cry. So to have them right in front of you telling you how your work has inspired them, I mean, that's a gift that they're giving to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I do get inspiration from that. And, you know, I see a little kid or one time I was in Paris. Allison invited me on a trip there. And I happened to be out on the streets one afternoon by myself because I had never been there. And I was walking around. And this man and woman and two kids stopped dead in front of me. And he burst into tears. And he said, Little House on the Prairie, I watch with my grandma. And he gave me a hug. Like out of the blue, I thought, how does anybody even recognize me? You know, it's been 50 years.
Yeah. Well, I think you pretty much look the same. That's how. Some people look very different as they age, and some people really don't. And you look very similar. So I think you're not a hard one to recognize.
Well, I was an adult when I did the show. You know, I wasn't a child.
Right.
I was an adult. So. I look kind of the same. Thank God.
Yeah, and you thankfully, unlike a lot of, you know, ladies in our business, you have your original face, which is lovely.
Yeah.
Because
thank you,
folks become unrecognizable over time. And I think it's so important, and I hope we learn in the next however many years that you don't have to, you're just perfect the way you are. Everybody's perfect the way they are.
Thank you.
And I think that's
so
important.
Yeah.
No, but you're lucky that you naturally look great. But still, I watch a lot of British TV and a lot of Australian TV and a lot of Canadian TV.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of those ladies, man, they just let it all hang out. They go gray. They don't do anything.
That's me.
So beautiful, right? Because we're supposed to be beautiful at every stage of our life. That's part of being a human being. We're not supposed to look 15 when we're 80. But
exactly.
So I think you're very recognizable. But but now with all that you've done with Little House and all that you have, you know, all of the fan stuff that you do and you meet the fans, have you done any of that with Eraserhead? I mean, do a lot of people know that you were in Eraserhead, or is that kind of like your special secret for when they read the book?
Every once in a while, there's an Eraserhead event. I just got back from Dallas, Texas, where they were showing David Lynch films. So they flew me out to, you know, meet fans and speak to the crowd and all. But they didn't know me because when they were walking in, I was sitting at a table with some friends. And then they showed the movie. And then after the movie, they recognized me. But I don't think I look much like Mary X. Or maybe I shouldn't. Because Mary was a little strange.
Well, but I think they expect that.
Yeah.
And groundbreaking, right? I mean, as groundbreaking as Little House, just in a different way. I mean, that was the beginning of a lot of his films that every one of them broke ground because we hadn't really seen anything as bizarre where the underbelly of humanity was really brought out in such an interesting avant-garde way before.
That's true. You know, when David was doing Eraserhead, he was still a student at the American Film Institute. And I used to do lots of student films because how are they going to learn to direct if they don't have some professional actors to work with? That was
exactly,
my theory.
Yeah.
So I said, of course I'll do your film. Of course, I thought it was going to be about 10 days of work, and it turned out to be a year and a half. But look what happened.
Right.
He won, as soon as it was released, he won the L.A. Film Award and went on to do, what was his next film? I'm blanking on it right now, but it was, you know, a major film that he did next.
Was Blue Velvet his next one?
Blue Velvet. No, that was later.
Yeah.
It was
Oh gosh,
I'm blanking. It was Elephant
Wait
Man.
Wait a minute. Was it Elephant Man? Yeah.
It was Elephant Man.
Right.
Yeah, that was his
Elephant
next
Man,
film.
Which is brilliant. And it's interesting because that's kind of the Marilyn Munster of all his films. Like it's the one that doesn't really match all the other ones in the sense that it's very proper and very British, very avant-garde looking. But man, what a brilliant film.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, Jack Nance, who was in Eraserhead, he wanted so desperately to play the Elephant Man that the studio had already, you know, hired Anne Bancroft, of course. This was a film for her. Her husband produced it. And she wanted can't remember who played it, but it was a brilliant cast.
Unbelievable. Anthony Hopkins and John Hurt.
John Hurt.
Not bad at all.
Yeah.
And all the Oscar stuff. I mean, it was, yes, absolutely. And then he went back to do Blue Velvet, which was sort of his home base kind of film.
Exactly.
But the interesting thing I think about David Lynch is that there's always a pathos underneath the weirdness, right? There's this very kind of avant-garde, bizarre exterior, but underneath there's a pathos. Like, I think Twin Peaks is a good example of that, where you really felt for every single one of those characters. There was a softness inside of them that you connected with. And
the death of Laura Palmer affected everyone in the town. Everyone.
Yeah.
You know, it was so obvious. The town was shaken just to its core with the death of Laura Palmer. That's what, you know, when the famous saying, who killed Laura Palmer, became, you know, a keynote to, you know, cross the board. Yeah, he was pretty brilliant. I talk to David once in a while as I go off on these junkets for Eraserhead especially, and because I want him to, you know what I'm doing and that I respect his wishes that I never show the baby, you know, the baby in Eraserhead, that I never take a likeness or something to these shows. He wants the mystery to stay. Yeah. So I call him each time to say, you may have heard that I'm going to Dallas and that they're showing Eraserhead, but I respect your wishes and I won't take Spike with me. That's what we call the baby, Spike.
Now, do you have Spike, though, in your possession?
I have not kept it. I've been given it, and I give it back. I have fans that bring me replicas of Spike, but I don't keep it. Yeah, that's
Is there
David's
is there
wish.
A reason for that? That you don't keep it? Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, David. Okay. David doesn't want anyone to see it.
Okay, but didn't we see it in
can't
the film,
talk,
or
I can't
did I
talk
just
about
imagine
it?
Huh? Okay. Didn't
what?
We see it in the film? Did we
absolutely,
actually see the baby?
Absolutely. And he wants people to see it in the film. He doesn't want me to describe it or talk about how it's made, anything.
Interesting.
Very heavy duty. Very emotional.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that is in sense, I mean, obviously it's a horror film. But it's also a supernatural film because
it's a love story
and a love story. But so many horror films are love stories at their core. You know,
That's
interesting about the baby, though. I didn't know that was the number one rule of the baby is we never talk about the baby.
Nope.
But isn't it fascinating
he wants
to you
people
that
to have the shock value, I think, to go in.
Right. I love that. Isn't that interesting that this film that you did so long ago, there are still fans trying to artistically replicate the baby. I mean, that's fascinating that
people give it to me all the time. Yeah.
But look at Twin Peaks that you were also a part of, right, of Twin Peaks.
Yep. Betty Briggs.
I mean, people like there was an uproar when it got canceled, and people for decades clamored for a reboot until there was one. I mean, people became upset. I was obsessed. I was a Twin Peaks head. Like, I was obsessed. I had the books. I had the Laura Palmer diary. When I was in college, when that came out, my friends and I were obsessed with that because we'd never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, it's pretty. And when I met David, he was a student at the American Film Institute, and I invited him over to my house so he could bring me the script, and I didn't understand it at all. But I'm an actor who believes in just working with the director's direction. So even though I didn't realize, I didn't ask him any questions. If he said to do something, if he said get on the floor, reach under the bed, and pull the suitcase 14 times, I didn't say why. I just did it because he had a rhythm in his head of what he wanted me to do. And so I would just do it. And, people ask me questions about actors and, what's your favorite director or whatever. And I said, whoever you're working with, just follow their direction. Don't try to make it your film. It's their film. So that's my point of view.
No, I remember some award ceremony, George Clooney won an award for Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, and they asked him what the secret was to working with the Coen brothers, and he said, stay out of the way and try not to screw it up. And I think that is such a brilliant line, right, that you just
that's
let the director
right.
have their vision and the writer have their vision, and you just do the thing to the best of your ability and get into the flow. Don't try to control the flow. Just merge into the flow and flow with it.
That's what we did. And Jack,
but that
Nance,
was a thing.
Who played Henry, Jack was completely
brilliant.
Henry all the time. All the time.
Oh.
And he worked on it for over 2 years. He had that hairdo,
Oh, wow.
That hairdo that stuck straight up out of his head.
Yeah.
He was Henry for about 2 years.
Wow.
And
was he Henry on the set? I mean, was he very deep method?
Absolutely.
So when you were on the set, you were on the set with Henry?
I wasn't as on the set with my character as Jack Nance was. Jack was Henry all the time. All the time.
Wow.
And the other thing, David only worked after midnight. So we would come to work at midnight and we'd work until 6 in the morning. That's the only time he worked. So I was wondering how that would affect his career as a director. Because you can't really do that in Hollywood. But that was the fact. I worked all night one night, and I had a 6 o'clock call in the morning at Warner Brothers for the Waltons. So I went from Eraserhead to the Waltons in the same 24 hours.
Fantastic. That's fantastic.
And that was just a year before Little House. I went right from the Waltons to Little House when it started. So, sorry, my voice is a little raspy. I've got some hay fever, and I'm kind of...
No, you're just fine. You sound fantastic. So you never... So Eraserhead and Little House never overlapped. You never had to do that double duty.
Only because it came out after I was already doing Little House. It wasn't released for a couple of years, after I worked on it. So I was already working on Little House when it came out.
And did the studio know that?
No.
Did the studio know that was you? Oh,
no,
that's fantastic.
Nobody knew. I never told anybody. In fact, I think the first day that they realized that I was an Eraserhead, we were doing Laura Palmer's funeral, and the whole cast was there. Everybody who had worked on the cast, you know, Twin Peaks, was on set. We were out on location where they were burying her, and I heard this murmur go through, and one of the girls looked at me and she said, "You are in Eraserhead?" I said, "Yeah." She went,
"Oh."
I mean,
oh my God, that's the best.
A lot of times actors think you're just who you play and nothing else. You know, I've done 50
right.
television shows. So, you know,
right.
I've done a lot of different characters.
Well, and you've had a lot of, and it's in your book, right? You had a lot of experiences off camera, too. Lots of, like, crazy fun and sometimes just crazy Hollywood stuff, really understanding that. And because there's a beautiful, lovely, giving, give back, humanitarian side to this business and this town, and then there's another side, and it's crazy and out there, and you know, like all the old Hollywood folks, right? So many of them were practicing black magic,
and
you feel that energy at night in Hollywood.
A lot of us were hippies, you know. In the 70s, even before Little House, I was a hippie. You know, I went on my interview for Little House on the Prairie wearing jeans and T-shirt and flip-flops. You know, how can they imagine
awesome.
Me as Miss Beadle? But I didn't know what it was. I had never heard of Little House on the Prairie. I knew it was Michael Landon, but that's all I knew. And I walked in, and there are all these ladies in Old West outfits waiting to read for my part. And I walked in and there's like 10 men sitting in folding chairs, and the producer in the front all the way back with a big desk. And I looked around the room, and producer said, "Are you ready to read?" And I said, "May I sit behind your desk?" And he looked at me, and he looked at Mike, and Mike kind of shrugged, and they said, "Okay." So he got up and went, sat in a folding chair, and I went behind the desk, and they were all kind of going, I went, "Quiet." And they went silent. And I think that's what got me the part.
Oh, that's the best. Yeah, you angry school teachered them.
Don't mess
with
me.
That's fantastic. You know? Right.
And I went
that's
on and
fantastic.
Read the script and, before I got home, I had the part.
Oh, that's awesome.
I love that.
But you didn't have any
what
idea.
What made me do that? What made me do that? I have no idea. I mean, it was rude for me to ask the producer to get out of his chair and let me sit there. What?
Right. Right. But don't you think as an actor and as a creative, and now I'm going to get all spiritual and woo-woo on you, but don't you think sometimes you tap into that creative channel and you get in the zone? And when you're in the zone, you're kind of co-creating with the universe. And it just, if you stay in that zone, it all works out. It's like when you do theater, right? I mean, if you stand on the stage and you think about all the things that go wrong, all the lines you could forget, all the blocking
right.
you could forget, everybody else in the cast could forget stuff. It's going to be a train wreck. If you just believe and get in the zone, you open your eyes and the curtain's going up, and you close your eyes and the curtain's already going down, and sometimes you can't even remember what happened.
Yeah, yeah. I don't do that much theater because, to tell you the truth, this is what I'm going to tell you a secret, which everybody can know now. The reason I quit acting 15 years ago was I was flown to New York to do a very small part in a film, and I couldn't remember my lines. I got there, and I was on set, and I know they were being very patient with me, and I was humiliated. And I got home, and I called my agent, and I said, "You know what? I'm done." And that was 15 years ago, so I was over 65 then.
Right.
And it was just kind of a fact that I had to face, that maybe this is the time when I retire. And I was kind of tired of L.A. anyway. So my husband and I packed it up and moved to Napa. And I haven't regretted. I've had a wonderful, full life here. But I had to realize that sometimes I didn't want to embarrass a crew, a director, and myself by going into something and they had to stop and stop and go and stop. So I just said, you know what, thank you very much, but I'm out of here. And it's been wonderful.
Yeah.
I have a wonderful life here.
That's beautiful. I mean, I think you need to know sometimes what is the next thing for you to do.
Yeah.
That's the healthy thing. It's funny because I have a friend that lived literally at Hollywood and Highland, and he's about 10 years older than me. He would always say to me, when I turn 55, I'm going to go live at Leisure World. And I would be like, Leisure World? At 55, you're just going to go and live at Leisure World, like in the middle of nowhere, like in Seal Beach? And then it's funny because then I turned 55 and I moved down here to fix up the house I grew up in, to rent it, fell in love with it and stayed. And now I'm like, wait a minute, I live in the middle of nowhere now, because I literally live
you've never been busier in your life.
But because of the virtual world, I've never been busier in my life. But I do live this kind of sleepy existence where I go have dinner with my best friend every night, and I hang out with her family, and I work in my backyard, and the cat and I watch birds and squirrels. And I'm like, oh, I've become that 55-year-old person who moved to the middle of nowhere. But thanks to the virtual world, I'm doing more shows than I've ever done, and I built a studio.
I got that.
It's beautiful.
I couldn't believe your resume is just incredible. I mean, I can't believe how much work you do. It's just incredible.
I do 5, 2, 4. I do 7 shows a week. Yeah.
Wow.
But I love it because I get to be in my house. It used to be I would think, why do I own this house? I'm never in it. And now I get to be in my house. I get to be with my cat, who's like my soulmate. And I get to be close to my family and be in a place where there aren't really lines and there's no traffic. And and be so close to the beach that I can literally hear the waves in my front yard every night.
Oh, how wonderful.
It's like paradise. And like you, I don't regret the 30 years I spent in Los Angeles. I still have my home there. I'm not ready
and
to give up on it forever.
I'm in the Napa Valley. I mean, how beautiful is that?
You went even farther.
I walk every morning, and about 2 blocks up the street, I'm in vineyards. So I walk through vineyards.
Wow.
And it's just lovely.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
You have to find the place where you belong. And I think the days where we believed that in order to be an artist, you had to live in New York or Los Angeles are over.
Now you can do
your thing from wherever you are, right? I mean, you're making your art, making your bags from wherever you are, and doing your thing and getting on a plane and going wherever you have to go, and then getting to come home to this very tranquil place.
Exactly. I just shipped 30 bags yesterday to Illinois for my next event. And I'm back working in sewing room now. You know, that's what I do, and that's what I enjoy. You know, I'm just so lucky.
Wonderful.
And my husband is very independent, too. Michael is, what he's doing now is he's come up with something for me to sell at my shows. It's called Miss Beetle's Lemon Verbena Candle. And he's been making candles every day with lemon verbena. And made up this fabulous little card that goes with it, Miss Beetle's Lemon Verbena. Because it says in the book.
Oh, you're not going to be able to keep that in stock.
I know.
Right.
That Miss Beetle, Laura says, Miss Beetle, she wears lemon verbena. It's documented.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're not going to be able to keep those in stock. That's going to go like hotcakes.
I'll have to send one to you.
But I love that you two work together. I love that you guys are very much a team, because you also help him with – is he – he's into geology, right? It's rocks with him?
No, he was doing – meteorites. Yeah, he's a meteoriticist. But when COVID came, it shut down all the shows, all the gem and mineral shows. Oh. So he kind of got away from that for a while. And now he's inspired to do, you know, candles, and he's got, you know, got a few other things on his mind. But, yeah, we're working together. We're a team, and it's fun. I married a younger man.
I love that. Oh, well, you know what? You should, because that's the life of a starlet. You should be able to marry a younger man. How much younger is he?
He's 67, and I am 82. So he's 5 years
younger. Oh, so 15 years.
Yeah. No, seven. Oh. I'm sorry. He's 5 years younger. He's 77.
Oh, he's 77. Okay, well, that's not that.
Yeah.
That's not that much younger.
But you've never seen a more active man.
You're not a cougar yet. That doesn't make you a cougar. You're okay then.
No, I'm fine. I'm fine. I walk a mile every morning. And
In your heyday,
in
the heyday of L.A. down here, I mean, was there ever anything that took you aback that was too much? I mean, did you see some stuff that you thought, I can't get on board with this. This is craziness. I mean, we see so much craziness every day, right? But every once in a while, we see something and we're like, oh, wow, I was not prepared for that. Even in the spiritual world, I think I've seen everything. And then somebody will say something to me and I'm like, what?
Yeah. I was a little fed up with the drug scene. You know, I saw it destroy so many people, you know, and I know you read my book, you know, I became good friends with Jim Morrison, and he was, we were buddies with benefits, if you know what I mean. And I traveled with him.
Yes.
And he was in a lot of trouble there for a while because they wanted to send him back to Texas to stand trial and for indecent exposure.
Yeah.
And I just felt so bad for him. I just felt so terrible because he was a brilliant guy, so smart, so funny. And it was six months after I was with him, he was gone. He was dead.
Yeah.
And it broke my heart. He was 26 years old. You know, it's just so tragic. Yeah, I'm glad I didn't get involved in all that, you know. I mean, I've had other problems.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it takes a strong person to be around it and not be involved in it. I mean, I've always not been involved in it, but it's been, sometimes it's a lot when you see it going on all around you. I booked live music. That was my living in my 20s and 30s while I was getting my entertainment career off the ground. And I saw it all too. And it's a lot. And it's sad because, right, Charlotte, it's such a problem again. It's on the rise, especially heroin.
I know.
It's completely on the rise with young people. I don't understand how people didn't learn from all the people that have died how bad this all is, but it's all on the rise again.
And worse
than ever.
It's fentanyl and all of those horrible drugs. Horrible.
Right. Now it's all kind of different stuff.
I mean, we smoked a joint
once
in a while, and every once in a while took a snort of coke. But, you know, it wasn't a lifestyle. But I've got a funny story for you. Have you got time?
Oh, yeah.
I was back in the days of hippie-dom. I was hanging out with Joni Mitchell. She had just moved out here and didn't drive, so I would spend a lot of time with her and Graham Nash. They were a couple then. And we were in Benedict Canyon at Dallas Taylor's house. He was backup for Neil Young. And Stephen Stills and David Crosby came crashing in the door and said, "Everybody, you can't leave the house. Somebody's killing everybody in Benedict Canyon." This was the Sharon Tate murders. And he said, "You can't leave. There's murderers coming through Benedict Canyon." And I stood there and I said, "But I have to do Bonanza tomorrow." "I can't stay here." I just think that's so funny.
That's hysterical. You know, I interviewed Sally Kellerman once, many times, but one time when I was interviewing her, she said that before the Manson murders, nobody locked their doors in Hollywood, that she had a cat, and she would go to work during the day or at night, and she would leave her door open, like, you know, six, seven, 8 inches, so the cat could come and go. And it never occurred to you to close your door, lock your door. You just, everybody in the apartment complex, everybody left their doors open, and you just went in and out of everybody's places. And then after the Tate LaBianca murders, it was like a whole, like, dark blanket went over the whole city, and everybody started to become very scared. And isn't that interesting?
Guns. Yeah.
Right, right. So you were talking earlier in the show about, yeah.
No, I just remembered that after that LaBianca and the Sharon Tate murders, almost all my friends had guns. They kept guns at home. And I didn't have anything like that. But, oh, my God, and I was living in Laurel Canyon, you know. Anyway, it was a crazy time. It was so awful.
So it's interesting how we talk about how – we talked earlier today about how inspiration spreads, right? And it's sort of the wheel of everything. You know what? A dark episode like that spreads in a negative direction, and it's the same thing. It's suddenly the whole town lives in fear because they never occurred to people that there was the possibility that this darkness existed in humanity until they saw it.
Yeah.
And then it changed everybody's consciousness forever. And that is that's hard. But what an amazing time to have been in this town in the 60s and 70s. I mean, amazing for film, for television, for music. I mean, and I like to say, because being a kid that grew up in the 70s, the 70s were the last time that people were really free. Because when the 80s came, drugs was going to kill us, sex is going to kill us, our food's going to kill us, the environment's going to kill us, alcohol's going to kill us. Suddenly in the 80s, we just started panicking about everything, and people have never really been free. And I think I just got a new car. Whenever I get a new car, I get, they give you Sirius for a year, and I've been listening a lot to the 70s channels. And even I think reflected in the music, that freedom that I grew up on. I always say that the reason that kids of my generation are so nostalgic is because we grew up in the 70s thinking we were going to inherit a different life in the 80s. When we got to the 80s, it was a whole different ball game, and we're still wanting our free 70s to come back, but I don't know that it's ever going to come back at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think
I never got my free love 70s, Charlotte.
Yeah, well, I totally agree. I love the free love 70s. You didn't have to get married. You didn't have to make commitments. You were all friends with benefits. Friends with benefits.
Yeah.
No guilt.
Yeah. See, now I'm more jealous because you make it sound even more fun than anybody does.
I had a lot of fun. When people read my book, they get shocked at how I spent my life, you know, and how many men were in my life. You know, I didn't want to marry him. I didn't want to marry Jim Morrison. I wanted to go have a drink, go on the road, have fun, you know, no promises.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that was the age of, you know, no promises. And I will I'll cherish the memory because I really had fun. It was tragic. But
that's,
you know.
I think that's, it's important for people to find their freedom somewhere. And that was a place where you really found the freeness of your spirit. And I think as artists, we have to find a place for our spirits to run free because we're not the kind of people that you can put in a box.
I agree. And I'm so grateful that I have found a time in my life where I still feel creative, even if I can't act anymore. I can still feel creative and make people happy because they want to meet me. You know, I travel all over the country meeting hundreds and hundreds of people, and it makes them happy. And boy, it makes me happy too. I never thought that would happen.
Yeah.
You know, when
absolutely.
We did Little House on the Prairie. Go ahead.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead. I would just say, when we did Little House on the Prairie, we were so looked down on by Hollywood. You know, went, that show. Well, look,
right.
He's still on the air 50 years later.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And I'm always surprised because sometimes at night when I'm looking for something to watch as I go to sleep, it's on a channel like late at night and I always see it. I'm surprised how many of the episodes I still remember. Because they really stuck in your brain. As a matter of fact, the other night I was in a, like, not feeling good. And when I had the flu, and it kind of grabbed me out of nowhere and took my voice, which is why we didn't do this earlier. And while when I don't feel good, I don't like to watch unhappy things. Like, I'll watch anything, horror, sci-fi, true crime. When I don't feel good, I just want happy. And
you're watching,
and my
go-to
is Golden Girls. I like to watch Golden Girls, but when I first moved into this house, my house is on an Indian burial ground, so I told myself when I first moved in this house, only happy stuff at night. And the cat, who was a kitten at the time, became addicted to Golden Girls. I think he thought they were cats. They were all cats. And we watched every single one, and the little guy burned me out on Golden Girls. I mean, it was like the theme would start, and he would come running from wherever he was and get up on the bed. I mean, he knew it was bedtime because Golden Girls were on. So I'm flicking through that, and I'm like, oh, Little House on the Prairie. And I said to myself, if it's any episode except the one where Carolyn gets the blood poisoning, I can watch it. And sure enough, I see Doc Baker come out of the room, and I'm like, it's the blood poisoning episode. Like, what's the chance of all? Because as a kid, that episode scared me. I was terrified of that episode when I was young.
She was all alone. She was all by herself. Paul was gone.
Right.
The girls were gone. Yeah.
Everybody was gone.
Yeah.
And then the worst happened. For years, I was sure I was going to get that blood poisoning. Really?
I'm going to be seeing Karen Grassley, on my next trip. We're going to be in Kentucky together. And I haven't seen Karen since I moved out of L.A. And she's in she's near Berkeley. And I don't know why we just never, connected up here. But, I'm looking forward to seeing her. It's been a long time.
That's nice. That's beautiful. Where are you going in Kentucky?
You know what? I haven't the faintest idea. They said, they call me and give me dates, tell me when and where, but I don't even, I just write a note in my book, Kentucky, and then they send me an airline ticket, and then I find out where I'm going.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I do so many of these that I don't know where I'm going half the time.
And are they usually in more rural areas? I think you said something about that earlier, that they're usually in more
Absolutely.
Rural areas.
Yeah, they're all in rural areas. Missouri, Kentucky, we're going to be going a small town in Illinois. We're going to Alabama. Forget, we've got a whole series of things to do between August and December. We've got a bunch of junkets. So, and it's fun. I have that thing in my voice, too, from one of these hay fever things. It's the only time we get to see each other because we live all different places, Never get to see my cast until we get off the plane.
get in the car and go where we're going. And do you find time to socialize a little bit while you're there? Do you get some friend time with them all?
Oh, yeah, we do. We spend a lot of time together. All day, and
I think that's
all
wonderful.
Same place. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I think it's it's so important the way that you've all stayed such good friends. Because I think when you spend that many years of your life in a project, when you look back on it, you want to think warmth and family. You don't want to think about discord and it's interesting.
No.
Charlene Tilton is a good friend of mine, and the first time she ever did my show when we first met, I was talking about Little House on the Prairie as the example, and she said that the Dallas cast is like that. And she said that basically the first couple weeks they were on the set that Larry Hagman said, look, we're not going to be that cast that fights. We're going to be that cast that's a family. And they've stayed a family all these years. And I think it kind of trickles down from the top, right? Michael kept you all a family. And it's just what you learn to do. And now you just know how to be a family, and it's so important.
We have such respect for each other, and we have such respect for what we are allowed to do. This is phenomenal that this long after doing a show, we still have fans. I don't know how many shows you can name. We also at I did the Waltons too. So sometimes the Waltons, will include me in their trips around the country,
Oh, nice.
It's really nice. And they're a good crowd too. They have a whole
they
relationship
are.
With each other. Yeah. Yeah, I know you've talked to many of them.
Yeah, they're another good group. Yeah, they're another really good group. And I think, because otherwise you look back over, like, you know, 5-10 years of your life, and all you can think of that it was miserable. That's a big chunk of your life to be miserable.
Oh, yeah,
so
no,
to have
no.
those good memories, I think that's the most important. You're so lucky that you have, like, all these different families that you get to go and do
I
the conventions
do.
With and go meet the people. And what a great life you have, my friend.
I
you
know.
Thank you for being here. And
you're so welcome. You're so welcome. And I'll see you when I come to L.A. next year for the Little House on the Prairie 50th anniversary out in Simi Valley. I'm sure you're going to be there.
I absolutely will be there. Yes, I will. I believe that my friend Orlando has something to do with putting that together.
Oh, he does. He's very involved. Yeah,
I'm sure he'll
about
call me out to
plans.
Do something.
Oh,
you
I'm
may
sure
see me
will.
Moderating
yeah.
a panel.
it's going to be a lot of fun.
Where can people find you and get the book and get to
okay,
and get to know a little bit about your life more?
Yeah, book is called Little House in the Hollywood Hills, A Bad Girl's Guide. And they can find it on Amazon, or I give out my email quite frequently, and I don't mind doing it because I meet lovely friends. So my email, I'm going to say it and then I'll spell it, is LottieBanks@yahoo.com. And you have it, I think, because I think you've sent me some stuff.
I do. Yes,
Lottie
I can
Banks,
get it from me, L-O-T-T- sure.
Yeah, LottieBanks at Yahoo, I answer all my email, and that's how I sell my beetle bags online, is through my email.
Wonderful. And the candles are
I know.
Coming. I'm so excited.
The candles are coming. Miss Beetle's candles. Yeah.
I am so excited about that, and so excited for you, sweetheart, and I'm so glad that you did this with me, and you're going to come and do my web TV talk show next week, and I'm so excited about that, and
good.
I'm thrilled
right.
always to
you get
spend
to see
time
the real
with you.
Me.
And I can't wait
I'll
to see you
makeup.
When you're in town.
I'll do my hair.
Oh, nice. And you can show your beetle bags. People can see them, and they can see
I
the
can.
Book. And the candles? It's going to be so exciting.
Absolutely.
It's going to be like a mini home shopping network episode. Thank you, honey. It's always fun to be
you
with
so.
You.
God
I love and adore you. And I will see you soon,
I'll
my friend. Thank you for being here. Next week, the wonderful Charlotte Stewart, everybody. Isn't she the best? If you missed those links, I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com, SheenaMetalSpiritual.com, and I am all over social media. At Sheena Metal, and I'll give you my number. It's 818-437-0886. Feel free to text me at any time about anything, and I also answer all of my text messages. And if you want my email, it's on my website, SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. Till I see you next Wednesday at 3 o'clock Pacific time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity. Always work to raise your vibration and know that you are love and you are loved and you're loved by me. I'm Sheena Metal, and this is Raising the Vibration, my nonprofit, raisingthevibration.org, and this show, raisingthevibrationradio.com, and then, of course, liveparanormal.com for the network, iheartradio.com, and all of our affiliates. I love you, and I'll see you next time. Take care of you.